I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. Thank you for joining us today in the studio of St. Macrina. She is the patron saint of robotics.
What?
Okay.
She is also the older sister of St. Gregory of Nyssa.
Oh.
So his older sister. And the reason, so this is like the 300s. She's the patron saint of robotics because apparently on her deathbed, she was having a conversation with about automatons with Gregory of Nyssa about how do we know we're just not things that think they're alive, sort of trippy sort of conversation. Then there's a whole spiritual thing she goes down to. But so this 300s saint is the patron saint of robotics. I chose her because one of our listeners using ChatGPT wrote for me my introduction for you two.
Okay.
Today.
All right. So you're obsessed with ChatGPT.
I really hate ChatGPT. We're going to get into it. Okay. We're going to get into it. This is what the stupid robot wants me to say. Welcome back to the podcast, where today we're joined by Father Drew, our resident cherubic chaplain, and Father Garrett, whose passion for serving in Hispanic ministry is matched only by his love of basketball.
Oh, it's poetry in motion.
I don't know fully what prompts he gave it.
Cherubic. They must put that on chubby. That's the only explanation for why they would have put
that. Maybe they put actually cherubic and it just wasn't creative enough.
That sounds right.
I don't know. But do you guys have opinions about ChatGPT? Because I do.
I haven't used it. I haven't even tried to use it.
Does it come up in your life at all in any way?
No.
No, it doesn't. I don't even know how you would do it. So, I mean, I'm sure I could Google it, but I don't know how you would do it. And it never comes up. Maybe I'm not a good chaplain because it doesn't come up around the center. I haven't heard kids talking about it a ton. It hasn't been my experience.
The guys talk about it here a fair amount, and they've got posted outside their door stories that ChatGPT has written from the prompts they've given it. This is how Terminator starts. Yeah. This is how Skynet. This is where it begins. And I am preparing for the robotic apocalypse. Tell the guys I put up a picture of a Roomba every time I lift weights and just to kind of motivate myself. I dislike it. I know it's unstoppable, and I know it makes me seem like a really old man that I hate it as much as I do. And the person that wrote these prompts for me wrote them because he's trying to convince me that it's a good thing. It can be a helpful thing.
Yeah, I don't really know what it is in the sense of like the prompts and stuff. I guess I understand the concept, but I don't even know what that would look like.
So like he showed me, you could put in like a prompt, like write a reflection on the fourth station of the cross using Aquinas, and then it'll spit out 3 or 4 paragraphs of a reflection on the
like
fourth station.
Like immediately?
Pretty quick. Pretty. Depending
it just
on
mines
how,
all the data
yeah.
of everything?
Yeah.
In the whole verse? All the verses?
I think its main source is Wikipedia, maybe? I don't know. I could be wrong on that.
Wikipedia is the best because anyone can put anything on there so you know you're getting the best information possible.
Well, that's just like he says it can routinely be in error in its quotes, and you'll ask it things and it... And people complain about it. It'll go into phases where it just starts making things up. It's problematic. It's going to get better about that. I mean, the technology is going to get better. But what I feel like John Henry, you guys know the story of John Henry?
Who's battling against the machine?
Yes. And he beat it, but it killed him.
Yeah.
That's how I feel like my life. I just feel like I'm battling ChatGPT.
No,
I am better than it, but it's going to kill me.
Yeah, the only thing I've read about it is one of the guys that was part of the developer or maybe worked for
GPT.
That one. He no longer works for them and is saying like, this is basically, we're going to Skynet. Like, this is the end. And so if he's like way on the inside and is saying, we need to put a pause on this, I trust him and I trust you. But I would sacrifice you to stop it. So...
Me too.
Worth it.
I would too. Yeah. If that's what it took to stop the Terminator, I will lay down my life for that one.
We'll take applications if you want to be the new host of about 4 o'clock if we lose Chad to the AI wars.
Well, we'll just use the AI. The AI will be the new host. Oh, good call.
That would be salt in the wound because it's listening right now.
It is listening.
Have you? Because there's a whole theory on that, right?
No, I don't know.
About when the robotic apocalypse revolution starts, it's going to mine its own data for the people that spoke bad about it, and those are the first people that are going to be killed. So there are people that speak well of it just so that they will be allowed to survive when the robots come for them. I am not going to be one. Come and get me. We had robots.
Professor in seminary who, whenever he would talk poorly about someone, perhaps in the church, he would always look up at the camera that was in the room to film homilies, and we go say, "They're doing a great job. Thank you to the Majesty. Thank you for your work, China." Just to make sure that nobody could accuse him.
No, this is how it is. I am drawing my line in the sand. It knows where I'm at. I do think I think priests are going to be using it for ministry. I don't think that's a good thing.
Really? But I mean, priests are, I think, already using just the homilies that they found online, I guess. So that's not a shocking thing. And that's not a good thing.
But you're right. You're right.
So I guess that's not a shocking turn of events.
And in fairness, I've used some of... I don't know if I've ever gone whole hog, like online homily where I've used the whole thing. I've taken some ideas, with the one exception of Spanish homilies.
Oh.
Because then sometimes I'm covering, I'm in a pinch. I'm like, all right. This is a trustworthy source. We're going with
That's
it.
Funny.
But yeah, it's a soulless future, ChatGPT.
I'm looking out for number one, so I'm abstaining from saying anything.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Sorry to bring us on such a technological down note. So let's spice things up with some levity and go to volume two of Seminary Early Days Occurrences, Pranks. I'll start us off. When I was at the Mount, so the Mount's, it's the second longest running diocesan seminary in the United States. It's old. And the buildings have been there for a while. So everything gets redone every few years. And every time they redo it, a donor's responsible. And they put up these plaques that are pretty homogenous across the board. And so me and three other students decided if we went to a part of the seminary that hadn't been redone yet and dedicated something for ourselves and had one of those plaques made, by the time they actually redid it, they wouldn't know it was a fake plaque. So at Mount St. Mary's, there is a room dedicated to me and three other guys. We made our own plaque. We had a little ceremony. We blessed it because I was a deacon at the time, and we attached the plaque to it. And I think unbeknownst to the Mount, it's appeared on their Facebook page already.
Nice.
Within the last year. They weren't pointing out the plaque. They were talking about this room and its history and what needed to be done with it. But you can definitely see, and if you zoom in on the picture, our plaque there and the Latin quote we put on it. And so
it's still there.
It's still there.
Like a legit bronze or it's like.
We went to a trophy shop, dictated it to them. It was me and two other class presidents, and one of them's a Carmelite today. The other one's a priest on the East Coast. And then we had a little Latin phrase in there and dedicated this object of history to ourselves. And yeah, what are we, 13 years later? It's still up.
Wow.
So
what's the room used for?
It's, well, good
don't
away.
Narc yourself, but.
If you look on that picture right there, the very center high point.
Really?
So it would call people to prayer.
That's beautiful.
Beautiful.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Congratulations.
So, you know.
I like that, though. That's my kind of...
It's classy.
Yeah, I said before, I'm not a huge fan of the pranks when I'm not good at them. And it's just like, if it destroys something or you have to get new sheets or something like that, I'm like, was this that fun enough to make someone have pain? But if it's just clever and also kind of maybe poking some fun at little silly things in seminary that you just have to do on the regular... So that's what I thought of. There was one at Conception. We would have once a month student of the month. And so you took nominations. And so at one point, one guy, Tanner Cody, he would drink a cup of coffee every morning. And I think it just started out of laziness, but he would just keep the cup in his room. Soon he had 20, 30, 40 cups, mugs just in his room. And then there was a notice that went out of hey, the kitchen has noticed we're missing a lot of the cups. And so we figure maybe, there's one or two in each room, or if someone could just find a way to get all of these cups back. So then Tanner claims that he went around and searched the whole seminary grounds and found like 100 coffee mugs and returned them to the kitchen. And so he won student of the month because of his generous service to like community to, yeah, it was. And he gives a speech and, you know, everyone knows really what happened.
Yeah, that's sure the formators probably didn't know, and the students were just like, and so I'm sure the formators found out pretty quick because we weren't as sneaky as we thought. I had forgot about that. That was very funny.
That's good. Well, to your point, too, about pranks that tear things up, I'm in agreement with you. Here at the House of Formation, we are actually a strictly no prank.
Oh.
So I feel like should any listeners that think they may be in the house in the future, we are a no prank house for because we are so small. One, pranks can escalate where they become mean-spirited pretty quickly. And so we just like, nope, we're not doing it at all at the house.
We were my deacon year. All the Wichita guys were around a table for dinner one night, and a text had gone out earlier in the day about it being Father Ty Taylor's birthday the next day. And Father Carline, at the time he was a deacon with me, had misread it. So we're all having dinner, and Carline's getting up, he has to leave early, and he just goes, "And Drew, I'm sorry, I did not realize it was your birthday tomorrow. I apologize for that. Will, I really feel bad. I picked out where we were going to dinner tomorrow. You can pick. I gotta go. I'm sorry." So he gets up and everyone's like looking at each other like, "What just happened?" Like, I think we might have an incredible opportunity. So I had Garrett text Carline saying, "Hey, will you go into Drew's room tonight and look for this book? I want to get it to him for his birthday tomorrow, but I'm not sure. I think he already has it." And that like cinched it for Jacob somehow. So that night he brought Irish car bombs for the entire diocese of Wichita to celebrate my birthday because he felt bad that he had almost forgotten it. The next morning, we got to the lady who sends out the emails, the birthday emails, first thing in the morning. She sent out an email to the whole seminary saying, "Happy birthday, Drew." Then she sent out an email to the whole seminary minus Carline saying,
"Yes,
it's Ty's birthday, not Drew's. I don't know what's going on, but be cool." Then everyone else was in on it. So it's like I was walking through the hallways. People would be like, "Happy birthday, Drew." I would text people outside of my, like my mom and stuff, to call me when Carline and I were together. And I'd put them on speakerphone. I was just like, "Hey, mom." It's like, "Happy birthday, Drew." I remember us walking into the chapel and Mason, the Father Mason, the rector, it's like, "Hey," someone was like, "Happy birthday, Drew." And Mason goes, "Yep, only comes once a year, doesn't it?" And at one point in the evening, Carline goes, "Why is everyone asking me how your birthday's going?" Then he bought dinner for me and at a nice place and a few other priests. And then we went out for ice cream the whole seminary for my birthday. And finally, we sing happy birthday to me. And we all have coordinated that we say Ty instead of me. And Carline then realized what's going on. He does not wish me happy birthday to this day. He's boycotted my birthday. Ty was such a champ to give up his birthday.
The unspoken victim in that is Ty.
Ty was a champ. He was a champ about it. It was for a greater cause.
I feel like we need to have him just to invite for him to emotionally recollect on that day.
On that, really, it was a funny.
Everyone ignored him.
It took all of my energy. It took all of my focus and my money. I had to repay Carline for a lot of this.
Nice. That's great. Well, we haven't done a Lexio episode in a while, so I thought today we would return to that. And I wanted to look at 1 Kings chapter 19, 8 through 13. So that passage reads, "So Elijah got up and ate and drank. Strengthened by that food, he traveled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. There he went into a cave and spent the night. And the word of the Lord came to him, 'What are you doing here, Elijah?' He replied, 'I have been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. I am the only one left, and now they are trying to kill me too.' The Lord said, 'Go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by.' Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks, but the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. When Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. Then a voice said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" I use that passage a lot with high school students when I'm talking about discernment, just for, I think there's a number of things we can go into, but the obvious point of God doesn't always send out the blinking neon sign that we were expecting of a sign. You know, there's all these powerful things. And I love the rhythm of that and the prayer of, you know, the wind, God was not in the wind, the earthquake, but God was not in the earthquake, the fire, but God was not in the fire. And then a gentle whisper. And especially in our world of noise and distraction, sometimes the only thing we feel like that can grab our attention is the fire, the earthquake, and the wind. And so we have to train ourselves for that prayer, for that time of quiet, for that interior recollections that we can be met by this gentle whisper. That idea of a vocational call is not a command. It's not a, you must do that. It's gentle. And it comes in a whisper. And so I return to that thought a lot. And when I'm discerning with a man, I feel like that's part of what I'm doing is helping them to listen for that gentle whisper. Because anyone can spot a fire, can spot an earthquake. But when you come and talk in the vocations office, we're listening together. Has that gentle whisper been moving in your life? So it's a passage I like to return to again and again, especially with guys that are in the beginning of discernment, to set expectations. I don't know what else jumped out to you guys.
I found this first portion with Elijah tremendously relatable, right? I've been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. And he goes on, he's like, look at all this stuff I've done for you. look at how hard I've worked. Look at how much I've sacrificed. Look at how no one else is doing what they're supposed to be doing. And I'm the one at long last who's been working. Is anyone going to help me? Are you going to help me? I think we've all had that experience with the Lord, maybe even with frequency, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe we wouldn't say it exactly like that, but it's like, I'm the only one holding this show up. Or, Lord, look how hard I work every day. Why aren't things going better? Or, look at how terrible these people are that are tearing your church down, and I alone have stood the test of time. And again, maybe we wouldn't be as dramatic as that, but that to me is a very relatable experience, and that one of the prophets had that as well, and that he voices it to the Lord. And he says, and he doesn't hold it in bitterness.
That's a great point. Yeah, he puts it out there. Are they the best thoughts he's ever had? Absolutely not. But he speaks them to the Lord. He has the courage to say that, the honesty to say that.
And that came from, I mean, God just asking him, what are you doing here? For me, that was a question I stuck with when I was praying with this. Almost just a good way, another good way for me to start Holy Hour is just to allow Jesus to ask me that and for me to have to respond to that honestly. And not to try to be like, I'm just so holy here to like adore you and love you so much. Sometimes I'm here just to be like, what the heck? I'm out here. I'm angry. But like, what are you just need to be honest about it. Like, I remember Father Ken Van Haverbeek said that he likes to do that, like at the start of a counseling or something, like start that with like, what are you looking to get out of this meeting with the person? Because sometimes it's like something that I as a priest can't provide or I'm not ready to or whatever. So like, just to establish that with the Lord in prayer, when he like asks you, what are you doing? Or what do you think? What are you expecting here from this time of prayer with me today? And one, just be honest about it and then allow him to take that and move with it. Because sometimes it's, I'm just tired and exhausted and I need some renewal. Sometimes it's confused and I need some light and some guidance. Sometimes it is just, yeah, I have a desire to be with you. But even just to name that and speak that, like you said, share that with the Lord is a great place, I think, to start in discernment and in prayer. Just what are you doing here? Why are you here before me today?
Well, and even as you say that, that brings to mind or brings to light, the Lord doubles down on that. He asks it twice. He says, what are you doing? And then he goes into, like you were talking about, that kind of self-pity, self-frustration. And then the Lord kind of like, yeah, but what are you doing here, Elijah? And he's forcing Elijah to go past that self-pity that he's been feeding himself.
Exactly. Like the fact that it's the same question. What are you doing? Ah, raging. Rah. Okay, let's take a deep breath. Okay, what are you doing here? I have that happen in the confessional all the time. They'll ask somebody, what's up? You know, what's going on? And they'll give some. Okay, so what's going on? and then we get to deeper reality. Myself, my own heart. Just, we had a podcast about our holy hour a few weeks past, right? That initial kind of running of the head and the heart during the start of holy hour. Okay, well then, what's really going on here? I've shared before, we do this at St. Paul a lot. What do you want? What do you want? Can you sit for 7 minutes thinking, what do you want? And the Lord gives that. But we do, there's something really healthy about getting that out of expressing to the Lord what I think I want, which is probably wrong. Like what he thinks he wants is, you know, X, Y, Z, somebody helping me out in this. Okay, what he actually wants at a deeper level, he wants to be, know that the Lord cares about him. Mm-hmm. Know that the Lord has his back. Know that the Lord is supporting him and that he's loved and cared for by the Lord.
Well, even as you're saying, that makes me think, I don't think this is just me, but to emphasize the importance of consistent prayer and why we do a holy hour every day is sometimes I don't get it all out in one holy hour. And, you know, the Lord wants to go deeper with me, but it may take me 2 or 3 days to get there. Just like, well, this hour spent frustrated or the Lord wants to talk about other things, but I keep returning to this point and I keep dragging it. He's going to let me speak my peace. And then the next holy hour, maybe I'm still not done with this yet, but at some point, he's going to draw me in deeper, but it doesn't always happen neatly in that one packaged hour of that day, at least for me. I know there's been, you know, issues like, well, we've been talking about this for a week. What are you really doing here, Chad? Mm-hmm. Okay, now I'm ready to talk about this, but I had to put a lot out there first.
And there comes like a spirit of expectation, but along with that, like being okay when that expectation changes. I was thinking about that just before. So he's at Mount Horeb, Mount Sinai is where he's at right now. So like, you don't only go there. This is the place of theophany. Like he's going to pray and to encounter God at Sinai. He's expecting something to happen. And just, asking myself, do I come to prayer every day in that same way? Some days not. Some days it's just kind of, it feels like it's just, I'm just kind of getting myself there and checking it off the list, but trying to deepen that spirit that every time I go into the chapel, I'm at Sinai and like, I expect God to say something. And even if he doesn't say the thing I expect him to say, he's going to use that and change it. But without that, that act of faith initially to say God is going to do something. Maybe I've shared this before. I remember we were on our way to the Holy Land pilgrimage. And so you're all jacked up and you're going to go encounter God in these powerful ways in these holy sites. And there was just a small chapel with a tabernacle at the airport. And I went and just prayed there a little bit. And I was like, man, do I come like there's this in with this anticipation and excitement and expectation that I'm going to the Holy Land? Do I care that just when I come to the chapel at St. Margaret Mary or at my home parish? Because I should.
Right.
You're more present here than in the rock, wherever at this, you know, archaeological site I'm going to. So just having that expectation and sharing honestly, and then the Lord deepens and that's where he can work.
I think you could even make, this may be too much, making too much of this, but that's kind of the journey of seminary. When a guy begins the application process, okay, I'm asking, what are you doing here, so-and-so? Okay. And then now we're really going to get into it. And at the end of the first year, there is a re-question. And really at the end of each year, what am I doing here? And you continue while that answer still makes sense. Well, you know, what am I doing here? And these are the reasons I'm here. But there is kind of a returning to that question. What are you doing here, Elijah? Again and again in seminary discernment. And each time, hopefully going to a deeper level with the Lord.
And as we've seen in talking with priests and hearing their stories, most of the time, the answer at the end of the first year or going in is way different than the answer year two, three.
That's a great point.
Ordination. And that's not obviously wrong or like that's that's how the process works.
Right. That's part of how the Lord's design is the organic growth. And that's why we have the process we do so we can go deeper. I think it's worth noting too, and I didn't read the passages that immediately precede this, but Elijah comes to Horeb out of despair. So again, a further pity point that kind of like you were talking right before that, he's so disappointed. He's one of those ones. Why don't I just die, Lord? Just take it. I'm done with it. And he'd been living as a prophet before. It's not that he'd been doing wrong things. It's just everything around him kind of got to him. And he's like, I don't even see the point anymore. What's the point? And the Lord, interestingly, makes him eat, which it is amazing the number of emotional crises that can be solved in at least a little bit with a bit of food and a bit of sleep.
You're not you when you're hungry. I mean, it's true.
Snickers is like
it's
the
like
third
a deep
God.
Spiritual. I've preached about that for sure.
I honestly, here at the house, so many times guys like, okay, get a little extra sleep tonight. and let's talk. And so that's what happens with Elijah. He sleeps, he eats, and then he walks for 40 days and 40 nights, and then he's in at Horeb, and he's able to do this experience of God. But he was coming from a pretty low point when he all started with this, and the Lord pulled him forth from that. Sometimes guys will have those low points, like, I'm doing it wrong. Well, not any wronger than any other human being. Mm-hmm. This is part of human nature that we don't work perfectly with the will of God, and there's consequences that parts of our life that reflect that when we're in those low points.
And like the fire and the wind and the earthquake are there, and Elijah, he finds out the Lord's not in it because he is like encountering it. So it's like Moses going to the burning bush. There's that line, which is the motto of the University of Kansas, which I must go over and see this remarkable sight. So he is like,
wait, what?
Yeah. That's the motto of the University of Kansas.
What is it?
I think it's Exodus 3:3. It's Exodus 3 something.
I must go over and see this remarkable sight.
It's if you look at the crest of the University of Kansas, it's Moses looking at a fire.
Yeah.
I had no idea. Uh-huh. I believe
strong
you.
And Judeo-Christian values.
I was going to say, that makes famously, no sense.
Famously. But there's like this exploration, because I think for them, it's like this exploration. I want curiosity. I think there's even some of that. Okay, Elijah isn't just going to hole up. He is like holding up in this cave, but he's still, the Lord's asking him to, he's going to keep an eye. He's going to, I don't want to say experiment, but he's going to interact. He's going to take a look at it. He's going to probe some things a little bit. And he's not just going to, he's going to be mad, but he's going to be mad in a way that still is curious, asking questions, interacting. Not mad, so I'm going into a hole. Because I encounter that all the time. I'm mad, so I'm closing myself off from everything else. Elijah's mad, but he's still talking to the Lord, and he's still prodding where maybe the Lord may be found.
Mm-hmm. I think it's worth saying, too, that yes, the situation around Elijah was bad, and he was taking the brunt of it because he was doing what's right. And that'll happen in life sometimes, especially, you know, I think of sometimes some of the high school or college students. Yeah, if you choose that I want to do the will of the Lord, there might be some consequences in the social world around you or things like that, that, yeah, these people don't invite me out or do that because I'm trying to live the life of the Lord. And yeah, sometimes when we are doing the Lord's work, and as adults as well, there are consequences that go along with that. And we're saying yes to some of those consequences. When Elijah was saying yes to preach the Lord's word, he was also saying yes to the reactions that people would be sending his way.
Also, I think it's in the chapter right before this, with the prophets of Baal, where Elijah calls down. It's like,
which is a great chapter.
It's an incredible chapter. And he is persecuted and things like that because of it. But he also has seen God respond literally to his direct request to send fire from heaven. Mm-hmm. And yet he still, shortly thereafter, is like, why have you never done anything in my life? Why have you never listened to me? And so there's some perspective there that I do think we do all the time. It's like, Jesus, absolutely, why have you never done anything? Why is my life always terrible?
Yeah.
It's like, yesterday something incredible happened.
My favorite part of that chapter is when he's taunting the prophets of Baal. Like,
he must be asleep.
Yeah, talk
a nap.
Louder. That's my favorite part of that. I mean, it's just so true. Funny. The other thing that I, just as I was praying with, and I don't know that there's an answer to it, but how did he know?
Mm.
How did he know? Scripture doesn't say it. It's not like he went to check the wind. Nope, don't see him here. Wind, God was in the wind. Earthquake, God was in the earth. Fire. And then there was a gentle whisper, and he immediately covers his face. I liken it to, you know, people that we've spent a lot of time with. You know, we don't have to be looking at them. We can hear their voice, and we know it's them. So that's my suspicion, is that he had spent enough time with the Lord that he wasn't confused by these things, that he knew the tone of the Lord's voice, or he felt, he knew what that presence felt like. But there is a question mark that hangs there for me. How did he know? How did he know that that was the Lord there, that it wasn't just some whispering breeze? And the only conclusion I can come to is he'd put in the time beforehand.
He had practiced it.
Developed that sensitivity of the soul to where the Lord is present. Yeah, just like you're saying, you train your ear to a piece of music or a language, like you can do that. In silence is the language of the Lord in prayer. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
I just had the only other thing, just to, because I have, like, this is honestly sometimes how our prayer works. Like, the first thing that came to my mind was he was not in the earth, wind, nor fire. And so I like sang September for a couple minutes in my head. It's like God was not in that. So he's not a huge, I don't know what they would be, jazz pop fan, but we move past that. We move and yeah.
You have a unique brand of mysticism.
Yes, yeah.
He was not in the earth, wind, and fire. Well, I don't know how we can get any better than that. Right. So with, if you learn nothing from this episode, it's that he's not in the earth, wind, and fire. Thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. The final word today goes to Father Drew.
I'm a little worried I've already used this one, but that's okay. It's worth hearing twice. It's one of my absolute favorites from C.S. Lewis. There are no real personalities apart from God. Until you have given up yourself to him, you will not have a real self. Sameness is to be found most among the most natural men, not among those who surrender to Christ. How monotonously alike all the great tyrants and conquerors have been. How gloriously different are the saints.
See you next week.